check in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And here we are at 1210 on the Wintrust Business Lunch in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Not such a sunny Michigan Avenue today, but it is a beautiful avenue as it has been for decades and will continue to be, even if we don't have our particular perch here. In the studio is Andrea Haynes. She's the editor of Blue Sky Innovation Tribune. She comes by on most Fridays. Andrea, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve. Okay. I'm so happy to be here today.
It's weird. It's just this, you know, I don't want to make too much of it. You guys, the listeners, you're not going through it, but we are in the process of moving. It's a little slower. The Tribune is ripping the Band-Aid off today, right?
We're ripping it off today.
I see reporter friends walking by in front of the window with boxes, and typically if you see a reporter walking with a box on Friday, they've been laid off.
You know, some people have mentioned that they feel a little self-conscious because they feel like everyone's looking at them thinking that they got, you know, got let go under, you know, weird circumstances. But in fact, we've all been packing up, you know, 100 years of stuff from this building and moving out. It's a sentimental moment, and I feel like it's also a civic moment. I know it's like we don't want to overburden people with thinking about our internal office, you know, where we're sitting or whatever, because who cares? But it's a moment for the city, I feel like. You know, there won't be journalists in Tribune Tower anymore. So it's,
I remember,
you know, it feels like a moment.
You know, it's funny. I remember the first moment I laid eyes on the Tribune Tower. I was in college and was with a buddy from Chicago. We came down for the St. Patrick's Day parade, and we came up to the river across, and like there it was. And I didn't know much of the building then, but it was striking in my ignorance, and it stayed with me. I remember the first time I saw it.
Yeah, it's great to have those memories, and I think a lot of people do feel that way, and that's also why, you know, if you aspired to be a journalist, if you were certainly from this area, many of us aspired to work in this building, and now we won't be in the building anymore. Same in college. I came in with in journalism school at Indiana University, lived up in this area, so I was up here on spring break, came with a friend, and we came and snuck through the back stairwells of the Tribune Tower.
Nice.
So I think we, you know, many of us have those kind of memories.
I have to say this, that I was talking to Bill and Wendy. I'm a nostalgic person. I'm not that nostalgic personally about leaving here because our situation is very nice where we're going. I will miss this window. But I just said goodbye to Sophia, and Sophia has been the cleaning lady here. And I've teared up, and I really feel badly for people like that because she does not know where she's going next, and just a dear woman, and her English is better than mine, and she speaks Polish first, so that speaks a lot for Sophia.
Yeah, Sophia's wonderful, and I get let in here because my pass for the newsroom does not work at WGN, so I just stand forlornly outside the WGN studios until someone lets me in. And the first few weeks I did your show, probably going back almost 2 years, I would stand out there, and I felt like Sophia was a little bit, you know, guarding you guys and didn't want to let in somebody she didn't recognize. And after a few weeks, she started to know me and let me in, and I felt like now I'm in with Sophia, so it's all good.
Well, this is a business show, and no one works harder than those cleaning people and the cleaning staffs. And so I've been trying. Sophia comes in, she takes the garbage out right at the start of the show. So I've been trying to get her to sit down and talk with us for just a few minutes. She won't do it. So, so we talked about it. God bless you, Sophia, and I wish you well.
Yes, thank you, Sophia.
All right, let's talk. What do you want to talk? Let's do with these Amazon Go scores we've been talking about, right? We knew there was at least one coming to Chicago or two, and now you guys know the location?
Yes, location is out there. They I don't think we'll confirm it yet, but it's going to be Willis Tower and Ogilvy. So two areas with very high foot traffic.
Now, I get the Ogilvy one. People are coming in, and they're going to be like convenience stores, right? They're going to be like grab a sandwich.
They are.
Lots
of it is, you know, things you can imagine office workers buying, lunch items, things like that.
And I did not realize that the Willis Tower spot would be as attractive because they're really overgoing a big overhaul there.
They are. They're doing some extra development there. So there's already about 25,000 office workers and tourists in Willis Tower every day who can buy those grab-and-go meals and drinks and things like that. And that could increase even more because they're in the process of working on a $500 million upgrade. So there'll be a big new sort of base with retail and entertainment space that'll bring in even more.
Okay, so how does the store work? You enter the store and they somehow read your data? Or
yeah, so it's one of those I know we've talked about that you don't, you know, you're not paying at a checkout like we're used to. So they're watching you, monitoring what you're taking and charging you, but you just walk out the door.
So you swipe your phone when you come in, right? You have to have an app. You swipe your phone and then they figure, what if they must figure it out as you walk out of the store? right? Not just as you put something in your, because you could pick something up and put it back.
Yeah, I think they do a combination. So they seem to feel like they're going to know well enough to know what you're taking.
Well, they know everything else. So why wouldn't they know this? Amazon Go coming to Chicago. Okay, great story, too, about the security of the staff inside hotels, right? There's an ordinance that says all staff, maids, and others who go into hotel rooms are supposed to have sort of an emergency fob, and that's by the first of next month?
Yeah, so here's a technological solution that kind of goes in with this issue that's been coming to light about hotel workers basically being harassed by guests, and some of the behavior is kind of eye-popping, like what people will do.
Right.
You know, it's often maids, people that are on the floor, women, you know, that are on the floor going into rooms and being subject to some crazy behavior and some scary behavior.
The unscary, well, scary too, but mostly just people answering the door in the nude, right?
Or yeah, and making asking questions about do they offer personal massage, right, and some things that, you know, cross the line. Yeah, a strange amount of people seem to be okay with like being naked all over the place when they're on vacation, I guess. But you know, some of them are adding to that with fairly loaded statements and things that are making people feel unsafe.
And it goes back to the leader of the IMF who was actually charged for a time for assaulting hotel staff.
Yeah, it's really a weird way of thinking. But like, you know, the story goes into that just some people are just have some weird ideas about humanity. And like they feel like the person comes with the room almost like that person's somehow there to offer you whatever service you ask for. It's super creepy.
OK, so they're doing it in Seattle, right? They've had these emergency buttons in Seattle for what, a couple of years?
Yeah.
And it was interesting to me that they've never been used. I mean, they haven't needed them.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. Does that mean they...
I wonder if it's a deterrent too, right? Like, well, if you know that somebody has a thing, I mean, it's just, it gives them a way to, you know, do a one-shot, push a button, and people can track where they are. It's like a GPS-type system. So their supervisors or security, you know, are notified that there's a situation happening in a particular place.
It probably, not to diminish it, but it also probably raises the level for reporting. Like, if you're a maid and someone does, you might say in a survey, oh, yeah, this knucklehead did this. But in real life, you might say, I'm not going to start an ordeal over this little thing. I'm getting out of here.
Yeah, you might be saying, am I really in danger, or is it something I could report
just
later,
terrible
right?
Behavior,
I mean, hopefully, yeah, exactly. Like, you should probably still try to handle the terrible behavior, but maybe the true danger situations.
So the story, you guys talked to a couple of boutique hotels, and they said, it's going swimmingly. We've done it. It works beautifully. But the bigger hotel organizations they're not really fighting it as much as they're asking for an extension, right?
Yeah, they're asking for some more time. Unclear whether that's going to happen. The deadline is supposed to be July 1st so that all housekeepers have these panic buttons, but
and not just housekeepers, right? I mean, if you go into service a room or anything like that, you're supposed to have them.
Yep.
Any idea what the cost is?
Yeah, one of the providers for that version of it or that brand of it, it's $100 per room.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, that's you know, if you're talking about a 500 room hotel,
exactly, a large hotel.
Okay, so the alderman says we might change the ordinance to alter who needs to have these fobs, but we're not giving anyone an extension, right?
Yeah, it doesn't look like they're feeling the extension request. They're sort of saying no to that so far.
Andrea Haynes, who is on? What's coming up with Red Eye?
So Red Eye's got festivals galore again. We've got Printer's Row this weekend. I'm sure you guys have been talking about that, the Lit Fest, mm-hmm, and all other kinds of summer things. So grab one of those.
Nice to see you. We'll see you
too,
again,
Steve.
In a couple weeks. I'll be off next week.
See you on the flip side. Yeah, have a great time off.
See you in the future.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It's 12:22 as we sit in the Allstate Showcase Studio overlooking Michigan Avenue on this Friday afternoon. The weekend is just ahead. CEO Tom Gimbel from LaSalle Network is in the studio. Tom, welcome back.
Always good to be with you.
Like, we haven't been together in a few weeks, have we? Have you been?
I think it was your last week, and then I think.
Oh yeah, I forgot. I'll never forget our conversation last week. It was outstanding.
It hurts so much.
Okay, so people have staycations.
Yep.
And you are suggesting stay interviews. Remain interviews.
Yeah, it's really coming from a corporate standpoint. So over the past 10 years or so, the phrase one-on-ones with your manager have become in vogue, right? Yeah. Oh, let's meet every week, other week, and let's make sure you know I love you, and let's talk about what you're working on.
It makes my skin crawl,
right?
And my boss knows that. When we have these meetings, it's just, I can't do it.
But how about an interview to make sure that you want to be here? Right.
Right,
not about your job performance, but more about where do you see your career going? What do you like? How are you doing? Maybe it's from an HR perspective. Maybe it's from your boss's boss. But to have some dialogue beyond here's what you did last week. Here's what you're doing this week.
Let's set some goals.
Yep. Bye.
And I don't mean to diminish those conversations because I think they probably are very useful for a lot of people. I'm not one of those people who reacts well to those things.
No, but I believe that great managers manage everybody differently.
Sure.
Right? And that's why the manager to employee ratio is so important. If you have way too many people and you manage everybody independently, you're gonna get killed.
So the idea then would be you say, I want to have this job in so long. But what's most important here, that the employee is sort of not venting but expressing, or that the manager is hearing?
Both.
Yeah.
It is the point of sometimes having meetings for meeting's sake aren't a bad thing. Right. Now, it probably goes against every management guru and Jack Welch, you know, accountability and hitting your numbers. But people want to feel a connection. So the expression is that we use all the time. People join companies, they quit managers.
Say that?
People join companies.
They quit managers.
They quit managers.
I got that. Sure.
Right.
Yeah.
So the belief is to find out if people are happy and looking on a broader scope before they resign, before they start interviewing.
And again, I keep bringing this back to myself because it's my only experience. Yeah. But, you know, I was always often led to believe that I was lucky to have a job.
Yep.
You know, well,
that's,
you know,
generational, I think.
Is it?
Yeah, I'm not even making an old joke like we usually do. Right. I think it's literally generational. Today, even employees who love their job, they know that what the market's... I mean, we're at 3.9% unemployment. Are you kidding me?
The last 2 months, right, there have been more job openings than people looking for
work.
It's
unbelievable. It blows my mind either side of the aisle saying that, oh, the economy could be better. Really?
Well, okay, so there's that then. Because people also say you've got to jump to make more money.
I don't buy that.
Well, explain that for me, because I did say when the wages came out, the latest job report, they said that, you know, the people who stayed in the job are the ones who saw the shortest increase.
Two things that a boss told me early on is, don't ever forget what comes with more money.
More responsibility.
You got it, right?
Nicer cars.
Right. Well, yeah. You know what? People always say that, and then they get to the point where they have a nice car and they never get to drive it, and they have a nice vacation house, but they never get to go there. And I'm not saying, you know, what's the delta between being happy at your job and making enough money that makes you happy? And is that, you know, what you're worth at your own company, what you're worth in the street, and what you think you're worth? And those three rarely are the same.
Right. Okay.
Right.
So you're saying that you can stay in the
job,
and
make more money. Absolutely. The key is, do you want to do more work? Do you want to accomplish more goals? And at the end of the year, or in a stay interview, you should be able to say, what do I need to do to earn more money in my job?
Right. How many companies have stay interviews?
Oh, I'd say probably, they may not always call them it, but I'd say probably 15 to 20%.
Right.
And probably small to mid-sized companies do it more often. They're more proactive
because
they can. It's harder for them to hire people. I have a ton of big company clients, Fortune 1000 companies, and they care about their people, but they're so big and so broad, and it usually gets driven from an HR, right?
Right.
And if HR is centrally located, you might not have the ratios to do it.
That's Tom Gimbel. Hey, last time we talked, I don't think we did talk last week, did we?
No.
You were about to jump on a plane to London.
Didn't do it.
Oh, you didn't.
No, American. I had an 8 a.m. flight. American Airlines canceled my flight.
Oh.
And the next one would have been, it was 8 a.m. The next one would have been at 6 p.m. And then I would have been gone for 20 hours.
So for people who don't remember, you had a free flight for anywhere in the world.
I still have the free light pass.
And
so
you're going to just jump into London for 30 hours and
come
back.
I think I'm going to do it the weekend before July 4th.
Well, I'd love the idea of it, so I can't wait to talk with you about that.
You got it. Good luck with the move.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It's 12:36 as we sit in the Allstate Showcase studio here along Michigan Avenue. The weekend is just ahead. Just thanks very much for tuning in to the Biz Lunch today. In the studio, Vugar Askerli, who is the CEO of Culper, a private investigative company. Vugar, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you.
Culper, that's a familiar name, right?
Culper was the first American intelligence agency and who worked against the British when we got the independence from the British.
It was the Culper Ring, I remember.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And that we adopt that name, you know. Now we're working under that name and provide that intelligent information for American people.
And so we talk a lot about immigrants on this show, and I want to talk about your business, but I want to talk about your story a little bit as well, right? Because you came from Georgia, or near Georgia, in the Soviet Union, right?
No, actually, I would like not mention which country I came.
You came from a country not here?
Yeah, it's, let's say that this country was one of the part of the former Soviet Union. And, you know, I used to work for a government. And when I arrived in the United States, I couldn't speak English, unfortunately, because I studied Germany in a law school back to the my country. Then it was a long process. I started working for a couple of the private companies, and I went to the law school here in the United States, and then finally I got with a couple of other people who was on the same caliber like me and who worked for the intelligence community. We created this agency.
So were you working in intelligence for that other country?
Correct.
And you were here, and then you stayed here. You that other country was one that which you, it might not have been easy for you to stay here, right? I mean,
I was a legal immigrant, let's put it that way. You know, I got my, immigration documents, everything. No, I mean, when I arrived, of course, I have a couple of interviews with American intelligence, but it's nothing like a difficult. They offer the job, but I prefer work for myself.
And so tell me, so there are others like you, right? Four or five, how many people are your partners in this?
That's confidential, but we have enough people to provide information.
What else can I not ask you? I want to find out.
No, that's okay. No, I mean, it's like, Culper is, like I said, a private intelligence agency, and our people mostly, you know, people speak the fluently 4 or 5 languages, and that we provide information for American people,
and
for our clients.
You're based here in Chicago?
Yes, we're based in our office in Park Ridge in Chicago, and we also, you know, have another agencies. I mean, like we have a couple of agents in New York and Florida.
And so when, you know, you think about, you're talking to a private eye, you know, I think of the wife hiring someone to track her husband, right? Or maybe parents to keep track of their kids, worried about them, or things like that. Is that the sort of, it sounds to me like that's not necessarily the stuff you do so much.
That's probably a general misconceptions about the, you know, private eye. Private eye is just like a piece of paper, you know, I mean, it's like a license to do the kind of work. But what we do, we provide that, we obtain the sensitive information for our client. Let's say that during the litigation process, and you want to find out if your husband or wife hid some money, we anonymously can check the bank account and find exactly amount of the money, how much that person have in account, and plus the all that last activities. Even if it's like money was transferred to the switcher bank, it's not a problem for us.
You can find that stuff.
Yep.
You also work with businesses, obviously. This is a business show, right? And so if there's a merger or an acquisition or things like that, due diligence, you guys can work and do stuff with them.
Of course, yes. And we provide that, you know, everything that we provide on a piece of paper. And that can be used in a court. You know, I mean, that's, like I said, a person who's a graduate of law school, we try to avoid that all hearsay rules, you know, that can lawyer can later use that. And we work closely with the lawyers. And we're asking them what kind of information they need and how we can provide evidence that they can use it later.
So the internet, does the internet make your job easier? Or I would imagine almost that the presence of the internet and all that can be done there probably makes your job bigger. I mean, there are a lot more crime or a lot more problems being involved because of the existence of the internet.
You know, I mean, we heard a lot about the cybercrime, all that stuff like that. You know, for that stuff, you hired like a smart people, like in IT technology or something. But mostly job, what we do, it's more about like a classic spy job. Let's say that, you know, if someone approach you accidentally on a street, mm-hmm. or, you know, you get meet with someone on a street and you start a conversation for 10 minutes, you can release a lot of information without even knowledge that you're releasing information, you know. Give you example, and during the Obama administration, they were adopted new, I forget the name of the law. They adopted new law for the patent. I'm sorry, patent law.
Patent law, okay.
Yeah, before that, if someone stole your ID, you still can have several years to go back. But now it's just 1 year. And can you imagine that? If you got your one ID and can like wait until the 1 year and someone will get that patent law, nothing you can do. In that situation, people in our caliber, you know, can approach the people and get the information easily, or can help you to find out if some leaking information. It's not just about the internet, but the people is like a misconception.
So, Vugar, you are working in the U.S. predominantly, right? Correct?
Yeah, yes, mostly like a 60-70% is a domestic cases.
You have a strong accent. You have a clear presence, you know, that you were an immigrant at one time or an immigrant. Does that make it easier or harder? I mean, if you run into me in the street and we start a conversation, I don't know how loose my lips are anyway, but I don't know if that would help or hurt.
Something like that. I'm really sort of sad. I just arrived like 2 weeks ago. How I can go to the Chinatown and then start conversation, blah, 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 like that. Sometimes it's help, sometimes not. And depends, you know, we have people who speak with not like me, you know, like who born here and
right.
work for intelligent community. And you know, they can approach differently.
Okay, what's the craziest costume you've ever worn? Disguise, I should say.
Wealthy people.
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, they think that, you know, it's only they way or no way. But unfortunately, we have to explain it doesn't work that how they want. We have to, be more flexible, and we have to be more creative. You know, if you want to get information, let's say that you're investing some money in Argentina, and we can provide you due diligence or risk management about that. We can provide you information in about that particular field and how many, political figures involved, what the political field... anything about these people, that's make your decision-making process much more easier.
So business is big? Business is good for you?
No complaint.
Yeah? You're not going to tell me where you're from. I'm going to try to find out where you're from.
You know, you are close. I'm from the Caucasian, you know, region.
Okay. That's
the place where they came from. But, it's not about it, just nothing so much secret. You can, you know, I have an unusual
name. I could hire
that, you know, and then you can probably find about
it. I could hire a private investigator and get that information on you like that.
That will be not that easy, but it's possible.
Okay, so you have a pretty intense job. It sounds like you go overseas, a lot of pressure, a lot of that. Do you collect stamps, or are you a bird watcher? What do you do to relax?
I'm reading. Okay. I have a old school top. You know, I'm sitting, you know, and reading. I like to read.
Vugar Escarli is the CEO of Cultbird. Thank you very much for coming by.
Thank you. Thank you.
I wish you a great success. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. So summer is officially here, and it's time for an ice-cold glass of lemonade from a neighborhood stand run by children on the block. Nope! There's a growing trend across the country where kids are getting their lemonade stands shut down by police because they don't have permits. Seriously. So, Illinois-based Kraft Foods saw an opportunity and offered to cover all of the fines that kids receive for operating unpermitted lemonade stands across the country. So, go ahead, get wild and spend another 25 cents. And speaking of pinching pennies, McDonald's is trying to save a few bucks by starting a round of corporate layoffs with $500 million in cutbacks. News came yesterday that an unspecified number of jobs will be cut from its regional offices by 2019 to what a spokesperson said is the beginning of a new field structure to support franchises. It's all in the wake of change as McDonald's is settling into their new downtown headquarters, where they house 2,000 employees and, get this, even a hamburger university to help mold their next set of company leaders. Only in America. That's your Wintrust Business Minute on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are. It is 12:51 on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. I'm off next week, actually. Just a quick note. I know Amy Guth and John Hansen, I think, will be filling in through the week. So let me pre-thank them for that. I am leading a group of WGN listeners to Denmark and Norway. And we leave this evening for what looks like a great trip. It's been warmer in Norway than it has been here. So I look forward to that. We'll tell you all about it when we come back. In the meantime, we do still have room too. You know, Dave Hoekstra is leading the group to Ireland. They leave on September 30th. The highlight there is the Van Morrison concert. But you can find information about that at WGNradio.com or at SteveBertrandTravel.com. Keep sending your reservations in, even if you don't hear me on the radio. On the radio now is Gretchen Van Vlijmen. She's the VP of Account Management at Stratex, and Gretchen's been on the air with us in the past. Welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be here.
Okay, so what's your excuse for not walking across the street to join us here?
Well, I'm a working mom, so I'm working from home today, which is what I think we're going to talk about.
Yeah, okay, so let me ask you a personal question. I read this essay you wrote, and it said that you were pregnant at the time you were writing it. Have you had the baby?
Yes, I had the baby proud mom of a 7-month-old little boy named James.
Congratulations. That's great news. So the story is because you are an HR executive as well now as a mom, a new mom, sort of to prepare parents and the company for family leave. Now, you said your baby's 7 months old. I'm assuming you've been back to work.
Yes, I went back to work after 3 months, after 12 weeks of leave. So been back for a little bit, but still getting used to it.
What was it like the first day you went back?
Well, it was a little bit overwhelming. Luckily, my company allowed me to come back to work kind of slowly in phases. So I was back a few days before my official return to work day, and I got to put my toe in the water, which was a really nice approach and made it a lot less intimidating.
Well, you know, because the piece I read from you, it talked about how companies should be very mindful of that and that they should allow for the moms, and I'm assuming in many cases the dads, to be away as long as they feel they need to, and that that will make them more productive when they come back. But I just wonder if it's as, I would imagine it's as hard after 3 months. I would imagine it's as hard after 7 months as it would have been after three. It's just the matter of that separation. Do you agree or disagree with me on that?
No, I totally agree. You never really feel 100% ready. And so the easier it is to come back, you know, with the help from your employer and the empathy from your employer, the better the experience it will be. So luckily, my employer was extremely empathetic and even reached out and said, hey, do you need more time? And made it very easy for me to come back, or as easy as it could be. But I agree, it's really tough.
Right.
And employers need to really reach out and make sure that those employees feel comfortable as much as they can before they come back. Otherwise, it's just not going to be a good experience for anybody.
What do you think is the biggest mistake that companies make when it comes to this?
I don't think that companies understand or are empathetic enough with the employee, and that includes dads. It doesn't just include the people who are physically giving birth, or same-sex couples or adoptive or foster parents. You know, this is a major change. And so even if you're not even the one giving birth, but you're still got a new child in the house, it's a huge adjustment. And to not give the employee time to make that adjustment is going to result in a lower productivity and overall loss of concentration, I think.
What percentage of dads take a leave now? I mean, my kids are in their early 20s, and I probably was home 1 or 2 days. I don't think I was home more than that.
Yeah, I think a growing percentage is taking leave. It wasn't always accepted socially to take that time if you weren't the one having the baby. But now I think with, you know, more bonding leave laws and paid family leave laws in places like New York and California, more dads and same-sex parents, couples, adoptive parents, foster parents are taking that time because it's their right, but because it's becoming more socially acceptable.
You're right about the fact what businesses need to do and to keep up with the laws and make sure they're up to speed with their handbooks and all of that, but also advise the parents to be, long before their parents, to be up to date on what the company policies are and what the laws are.
Exactly, because if you don't know what is out there and what's available to you, it's hard to make that argument, and especially if, you know, you're a dad and people are, you know, giving you grief about taking that time. I mean, knowing your rights and understanding that that's okay to ask for that time is really important, and also it'll make for a better employee, one that you'll retain for much longer if you allow those employees to do that. But yeah, being well-armed, having open lines of communication with HR and with your manager about your leave dates, all of those things make for a better experience.
You know, that comes up on the show more and more, taking the long view, not worrying about whether it's 6 days or 7 days, but the long-term view of an employee just pays off in the end. Gretchen Van Vlaemen is the VP of Account Management at Stratix. Thanks very much for joining us. Congratulations, and enjoy your time with your baby.
Thank you. Will do. Thanks for having me.